Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. They say that one man's trash is another man's treasure. Later we'll learn how that's been translated into a new television reality program set right here in St. Louis. But first, Illinois Congressman Bill Enyard. The freshman congressman's 12th district includes Scott Air Force Base and has a significant farming population, both of which are heavily dependent on federal dollars. Congressman Enyard told me in a recorded interview that he is happy that the Senate is following the House lead on a new budget, even though it is not all he had hoped.
It's not the budget that I would have written. There are certainly some sticking points in there that I'm not happy about, but I think everybody had to give up a little bit to get it done. And, you know, it wasn't a choice between this budget and the perfect budget or this budget and the budget that I would have written. It was a choice between this budget and no budget. And so when you look at it in that light, I think the compromises were necessary to get us a budget and to alleviate some of the effects of this sequestration, that is the automatic budget cuts that were just absolutely mindless.
There is another aspect to this that people are talking about, Congressman, and that is that, as you've indicated, it certainly was a compromise, but are we edging toward perhaps a new era of compromise on Capitol Hill?
Don, I don't know. This certainly is a good sign of that. It certainly shows that that you can take two people of very differing philosophies and political viewpoints, and that being Paul Ryan from the House, who was the vice presidential candidate last year on the Republican side, and Patty Murray, who is a senator from Washington, and they managed to hammer out an agreement. And that gives me some hope.
Well, yeah. Oh, you mentioned Congressman Ryan. A lot of people think that this has elevated him to a point where he could very seriously be a candidate in 2016. Do you see it that way?
Well, I think that he's clearly going to be a candidate in 2016. And I think that he full well understands that the American people want to see government work. And that if he's seen as somebody who can help make government work, that's a good thing for him, for his candidacy. I think it will undercut him on the right. I don't think it'll help him in Republican primaries. But I think it's too early to tell, really.
What do you make of Speaker Boehner's, let's find a way to say it as delicately and as diplomatically as I can, but he seems to have changed speed somewhat with regard to his approach to the right wing of his party. How are you reading that?
Well, I think it's two things, Don. I think, number one, Speaker Boehner full well understands the damage that the government shutdown for 16 days in October caused. And, it caused billions of dollars of loss in economic development. I think the last figure I saw was that it slowed growth by 0.5%. You know, those are jobs that people need when that happens. And I think he full well understands that it was very detrimental to our national economy and didn't want to see a repeat of that. And in order to do that, I think he had to provide some cover for his congressional members who are concerned about a primary from the right.
Is it likely to change the way business is done in the House in the weeks and months ahead?
Depends on how long he keeps it up. And it depends on how seriously it's viewed. If this was a one-time shot by Speaker Boehner, then I don't think it'll change things dramatically. But on the other hand, if it's part of a longer-term effort and Speaker Boehner's trying to nudge the conversation on the Republican side back a little more to the middle from the rightward tilt that it's taken, particularly, the domination by the Tea Party folks, I think then it may be a different story. Yes. And we may well see some more cooperation.
Let's talk about something I know you have a great interest in, as do so many of your constituents, and that is the Farm Bill. Can you bring us up to speed on that? And then I'd like to talk about a proposal that we're hearing about, whereby there might be some trading done, food stamps for unemployment benefits. But where is the Farm Bill right now?
Well, the Farm Bill has been extended for 1 month. The previous Farm Bill has been extended into January. in order to provide time for the conference committee, that is the committee trying to work out the differences between the Senate bill and the House bill, can finish working out their last few disagreements. And I understand that the question on SNAP benefits, the food stamp program, have been resolved, and the last hang-up really are between direct payments to farmers, and there's a bit of a disagreement between folks who grow corn and soybeans and folks who are peanut and cotton farmers. So that's kind of a regional issue. It's, and when we marked up the bill, when we worked on that bill in committee, it was very interesting because you didn't see so much disputes between Republicans and Democrats as you did between regional interests. The differences, for example, between the Midwestern folks who grow the corn and the soybeans and the Southern folks who grow the cotton and peanuts, and that's where your real differences were.
Bring me up to speed, if you would, then, on the food stamps, the SNAP provision. You say that that's been worked out. How has it been worked out? How is it at this moment?
Well, I understand there's been a compromise number reached between the House bill, which would very dramatically and drastically cut food stamp benefits, and the Senate bill, which had a smaller cut. And the Senate bill was $4 billion, and the House bill was $40 billion. So that's a very substantial difference. I haven't seen an official number yet. The number I've heard talked about is a $10 billion reduction over 10 years.
There is a piece that I read this morning involving Congressman Van Hollen of Maryland, mm-hmm. Basically talking about working out some sort of a deal potentially whereby Democrats would basically give up on the food stamps in order to get those unemployment benefits back to those who would lose them under the new budget on the 28th of December. Are you hearing anything like that?
You know, I know that there are a lot of Democrats are very, very concerned over the expiration of the extended unemployment benefits. And, you know, the number of folks who are receiving those benefits because of the very slow growth of our economy is of great concern to economists and to folks in the legislature. By and large, the people who get those unemployment benefits spend them immediately. I mean, they go to the grocery store. They go to make the car payment, to make the rent payment, the mortgage payment. So that's not money that's sitting on the sidelines. That's money that's churning through the economy. And folks are very, very concerned about what will happen to the economy if those extended unemployment benefits are shut down.
Is this something that you could endorse, do you think, the idea of this kind of a trade-off?
Don, I'm going to have to see the numbers before I'd want to take a position one way or the other. You know, the bulk of the folks who receive food stamps are children. Something on the order of 60 to 70% of people who are receiving the benefit of the SNAP program are children. I don't think we want hungry children. And the majority of adults who are receiving food stamps are working adults. You know, they are folks who are working minimum wage jobs or part-time jobs because of the slow economic recovery, because of the lack of good, high-paying jobs that we have nationally. And what we need to do, you know, the deficit has come down remarkably in the last 3 or 4 years. And it's come down because we have, although we've only been adding about 175,000 to 200,000 jobs per month, we've been adding those jobs. And as those jobs have been added, the unemployment rolls have come down. And instead of folks receiving government benefits, they're paying in as taxpayers. And so what we need to do is continue to develop that economy. It's one of the reasons I introduced a jobs bill last spring, which the Republican leadership has yet to call for a vote. But I would like to see that jobs bill, which in the Senate is sponsored by Senator Durbin, I'd like to see that jobs bill come forward, because that jobs bill contains training programs to take folks who either have obsolete skills or low skills or no skills and partner them up with community colleges, training programs and apprenticeships, and manufacturers. You know, there's an article in the Wall Street Journal about a week and a half ago that manufacturing jobs pay nearly 40% more than other jobs in our economy. And so, you know, we really, really need to work on growing those good-paying jobs and growing our economy. And of course, part of this is due to technology. You know, I toured the Anheuser-Busch brewery about 3 weeks ago, and the manager told me that in 1999 they had over 3,000 hourly brewery workers employed there, over 3,000. That's not the white-collar guys, it's not the advertising folks and the corporate folks. Those were the hourly workers. Today, that number is about 765. Now, that's due largely to improvements in technology. And he said they maintain the quality product. Their quality is better today because of the computers and the accuracy of the instrumentation. But what's happened, we've seen lower-skilled jobs that were very well paid. I know you and I are about the same age, and we know that, if you had a job at the brewery, that was a good job. So we don't have that number of jobs. And that's not true not only in the brewery. It's true in multiple industries. Over here in Illinois, we're actually mining more coal in Illinois today than we did 10 years ago. But we have far fewer miners because of improvements in technology.
Well, there may be some reductions as well at Scott Air Force Base. We have to talk about that in the time we have left. There are some concerns that when this whole base reduction thing comes to fruition in a couple of years, that Scott could be caught in that. Do you think it will be?
Well, Don, that's obviously a matter of great concern to me and to every person in the region. And I've got to congratulate the Southwestern Illinois Leadership Council. They've done a great job in putting together a task force that's going to work to ensure that Scott is positioned right at the top of the heap. As you may know, the National Defense Authorization Act, which was just passed by the House and I voted for, prohibits a BRAC through 2015. So we've got 2 years lead time here to ensure that Scott's positioned properly. The big reductions that we're looking at in the military, by and large, the manpower reductions are going to come on the Army side of the house. And so I think folks who have big Army bases or smaller Army bases, for that matter, really need to be very, very concerned. There's not a manpower reduction in the Air Force, but they are looking at changing some of the weapon systems. And the good thing for Scott is that the flying units there, the 126th Air National Guard Refueling Wing, Illinois Air National Guard, those refuelers are going to be in the air for another 20 or 30 years. I don't see a problem there. But I think that we need to position Scott to be prepared to bring additional units in as bases get consolidated. We want not only to ensure that Scott doesn't shrink or get closed, but we want to grow Scott. Such a vital part of our national defense as well as our regional economy that we want to be in a position to see that grow.
It sounds like you're pretty optimistic about Scott.
I'm cautiously optimistic, Don. Let's put it that way. And I'll tell you the reason I'm cautiously optimistic. Scott just won an award for being the best family-friendly base in the entire Air Mobility Command. It was competing against every other base in the country. I'm out there frequently, and I was out there meeting with the commanding general at AMC, Air Mobility Command, and he told me that there are only four other Air Force bases in the entire country which have active duty airmen, Air Reserve airmen, and Air National Guard airmen. There are only four, and Scott is one of those four. So clearly the way ahead is that we're going to see a continued use of our reserve forces and our National Guard forces. And he told me that it's critically important that we have the synergistic effects, if you will, of having those three forces on the same base. So I'm cautiously optimistic, and I'm optimistic also because there's been such a unified effort, not just at the local level, but with St. Clair County Chairman Mark Kern and the Southwestern Illinois Leadership Council, but also Senator Dick Durbin and Lieutenant Governor Sheila Simon have all been very, very actively involved in promoting Scott and ensuring that it remains the vital component that it is.
I know you've got to go. I have one final question concerning that. The job of this task force, then, if I'm reading you correctly, is it likely to be more emphasis placed on expanding Scott as they meet over the next couple of years, or just hanging on to what it already has?
Well, I'm certainly encouraging them to take a positive view that, you know, there are new buildings going up there now. We certainly, and with the fact that Mid-America Airport is co-located, and I think St. Clair County made a very, very wise step 15 years ago when they started buying that ground and added that ground, that 10,000-foot runway on Mid-America is necessary to either take off or land a fully loaded KC-135. That's the refueler the Guard flies and the active duty flies, for that matter. And the runways at Scott are only 7,500 feet. So it did a couple things. It provided a buffer zone around the base, and that's one of the biggest problems with military bases today, particularly in a close into an urban environment like Scott is, and that's having enough space to provide a buffer zone around the base. And so Mid-America Airport does that, and there's plenty of ground on Scott to develop future military missions. So I think that Scott is well-positioned to grow, and I intend to work as a member of the Armed Services Committee, the House Armed Services Committee. I intend to work not only to protect Scott, but to help Scott grow.
Illinois Congressman Bill Enyart. By the way, we'll have more on the future of Scott on tomorrow's program. But coming up, local production companies have done it again, come up with a new non-scripted or TV reality series set in St. Louis. It's about to premiere. That's coming up. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.